Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody's got the fever. This is something we all know. Fever isn't such a new thing. Fever started long ago.
Well, good evening, good evening, good evening, and welcome to Lenny Godfrey's Straight No Chaser. Boy, do I have the divas in here for you this evening. I am so excited about presenting to you the winners of the Bistro Awards. But before they can even get that award, they are all winners already. We've been talking off the air and talking about how much courage and how much support we get when we stand up in front of a music stand with those lights on and we decide that we have asked an audience to come and see us and hear us and pay a little money at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just an amazing situation. So before I introduce them, though, I'm going to always do like I normally do my housekeeping, but I'm going to make it as short as I can because I have four guests. And I want them all to be able to talk to you a little bit before you go and see them on Monday night at the Bistro Awards. So you are now on blogtalkradio.com/ S as in Sam, F as in Fred, T as in Tom, H as in Harry, and the number 2. You can dial in and ask questions or say hello to the guests, to myself, at 516-453-6063. We are getting close on 70 episodes. We've been doing this now for almost a year and a half. It's been absolutely wonderful welcoming people in the industry, outside of the industry, who have been influenced by the arts and knowing that us talking about it will sustain the future of the arts. So with no further ado, let me start with introducing these four wonderful performers that I have. And this is live performance, everyone. I really want you to know how much I love this. Mm-hmm. A lot of us do a lot of different things, but performers are right intimately with an audience. So I'm going to start with Claudine Casson-Jellison, and she is winning the Outstanding Autobiographical Show for Hey Frenchie. And believe me, we have there she is. Hey, say it again,
hello.
Claudine.
Hello. Hi. How are y'all?
And, yes. And then we're going to go to Kim David Smith, who has his recording live at Joe's Pub, and he's getting that award, Kim David Smith, live at Joe's Pub, and he has a wonderful cut that we're going to hear about his in a few minutes. Go ahead, Kim David. Say hello.
Hi. Hello, everybody. Hi, listeners.
And then we have Miss Gay Marshall. Well, I'm through with Miss Thing. Okay. Because this is recording this back on Boogie Street. Now, let me just say, I listen to a lot of music, and from time to time, what I like to do is to have people have cut clips of their songs. And these performers have provided such wonderful clips. We won't do but about a minute or so, but I advise you that if you can find their recordings, you go out and find these CDs and buy these CDs because these divas are fierce. That's all I can say. And so with all of that, I'm saying hello to the three of you, and we will be joined by Quinn Lindley at 7:30. So hello. Hello. How are you all doing?
Okay.
Hi.
Wow,
pretty good.
Yes.
This is Gay here with Back on Boogie Street. I just want to tell you, you have no idea how much I love New York City. And I haven't been here for so long. Got stuck in France for the entire pandemic. And that sounds glamorous. Believe me, it's not. And to be back here in New York, walking the streets, seeing the sights that I miss so much is just glorious. How I love this town. So I just had to get that out.
Well, thank you very much. Being born and raised in New York City, you know, I love hearing people who love New York. My love. It's my heart. I don't live there right now all of the time. But when I when I walk back in, it's just, I went to school there. My friends are there. So much. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to pick you out one at a time. I'm going to start with Claudine because, Claudine, you know, you remind me of me. I wanted to be a teacher. You have three masters?
Yes. Yeah.
Three.
Yeah,
wow.
I am so sick of you. I don't know what to do. But really,
well,
I
that
mean,
is,
you know,
we have a mutual friend, Pat Snyder, and I think
Patricia Snyder has
And I did my I met Pat when I was a freshman in college, and then I worked for her theater company for several years, on and off. I did Peter Pan for her. And we went to Moscow, and we did, I mean, you know, I did three productions of Peter for her. And it just was very exciting. But she was so into children and art and art education that I sort of reached a certain point in my acting career where I decided I wanted to do something different. And so I went back to college, and I got a master's degree, and I started teaching. And then I got another master's degree, and I started teaching kids with reading
disabilities. What are they in? What are your master's degrees in?
The first one is in elementary ed, and the second one is what we call reading disabilities. So it would be more kids who are struggling. And then the third one was in school administration. So, I did all that, and I ended up, I worked for the DOE for about 25 years, mostly the same school. I was a principal for a little while. I didn't want to stay a principal, and it was about time I wanted to retire. And I wanted to get back to singing. So, and it's really hard to sing when you're doing all that other stuff.
That we've gotten back to that, I want everyone to hear Patashu. This is a story. I'm telling your story. I just want to play a little bit about this character that you become in front of an audience. And then maybe you can talk about her. And it's just a delight. It's just a delight. Everyone, just listen for a moment here, if you could, please.
Voila. I was Patashu. Just got back from Paris, France. All they do is sing and dance. All they've got there is problems. What a tragedy. Every boulevard, every suburb in a trance. The people of town don't miss. Paris, stop. Thank you. You all know that song. We call it in French, La Guirlande du Pauvre Jean. But you call it in America, the poor people of Paris.
All right. So they're introduced. So tell a little about her, because I think at the very beginning, you talk about there is a shop that she turned into a cabaret, and then what she you pulled something out of your costume and what she used to do to the men in the audience. Talk to the girl about that. Okay.
Well, first of all, I saw the show Hey Frenchie is stories and songs from the pantry, because these are all albums that I found in my aunt's pantry when I was a kid. And I would just play them all over and over again. They were French albums. And so when I fell in love, Patashu was the first one I fell in love with. So anyway, what she would do is she opened up, Patashu means pretty much cream puff pastry. And so she took the name of this patisserie called Patashu, and she called her nightclub Chez Patachou. And she would come out on stage, and she would have a scissor, and she would just cut off men's neckties. And she had a collection of neckties hanging up all around the club. So, you know, she was really brilliant. And her costume was pretty much always a shirtwaist dress or a white blouse and a tight skirt. And she had very short hair. So she was sort of post-Piaf, but very much in the Piaf vein.
But she's an amazing singer. Patachou is an amazing singer.
Yeah.
Wow. I don't know why she isn't as well known as Piaf.
Well, that's gay talking, everyone.
Yes, gay.
Sorry.
she was absolutely wonderful. But now I just wanted to give a hint about Patachou and go back to you now, Claudine.
Okay.
Tell me
the beginnings.
Where were you from?
Yeah.
And where the arts intervene into your life at the very beginning?
Okay. I'm from Queens, New York. I'm born and bred in New York. At some point in my life, my dad was a restaurateur. He had a restaurant. He finally opened restaurants on the East Side, so then we lived upstairs. But for most of my life, I grew up in Queens, and I've then always pretty much lived in New York City unless I was on the road. So that's pretty much my life. But that pantry, those songs, that's where I started singing. That was the beginning for me. And, you know, I just would play the albums over and over again. And my aunt, who was a little bit kind of eccentric, she would sort of encourage me and beyond what the rest of the family would do. In fact, my parents never listened to music. They had very dim relationship with music. But my aunt just loved French music, and she also loved Broadway music. So she just was like, she would play it, and then I would do these little shows. And, you know, and as I grew up, I knew I wanted to be a singer, and I knew I wanted to be an actress, and that was pretty much it. And I had no other ambition, no other thing that guided my life. That's what I wanted. The only thing is about the show is about my on again, off again relationship with French language, because I got beat up in school, came home, and I told my parents I would never speak French again. And because I only spoke French for quite a while. So I told him I would never speak French again. And I pretty much stayed that way. And then there reached a point where my dad became very ill. And I broke my vow and I started to speak French to him. And then one day, which is part of the story of the show, one day because of this music, took out the music. I downloaded all the songs I had learned in the pantry, and I was playing it for him. And even though he didn't have a strong relationship with music, I won't even say what it is because it's in the show, and I have one more show to go. But we connected, and that's the gem of the story.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what music does. Now, I'm going to have to end yours right there because I've got to go to Kim David.
There we go.
Yes. Now, but that doesn't mean we're not going to hear more from you, because we will. But remember your train of thought where you stopped, because on here and on Zoom, we will continue this. Now, Kim David. Kim David, hello. Where are you?
Hello.
Yes.
Hi.
Yes. And Kim David now, you know, again, I will remind you, his award is for recording Kim David Smith live at Joe's Pub. And he has been known as, this is what, when I heard about this, he was the David Bowie of cabaret and the male Marlene Dietrich. darling, I want to play a little something. This is, well, I'm not going to say what it is. You're going to tell us what it is afterwards. I'm going to play a little bit of it, Kim, okay?
Okay. Excellent. Fabulous.
The moon was shining in the night. The hounds were baying such a simple song. And as you stole another bite, I knew my heart would be at stake. Am I just another victim? Cause I never can resist him. Oh, oh no, don't go. Your gentle touch is what I need so much. Dracula, la, la, la. I'm a sucker for your love when you do, do, do what you do to me. And you now, now, now. Now I've got you in my blood. Supernatural love getting through to me. Dracula, la, la, la. I'm a sucker for your love when you do, do, do what you do to me. And you now, now, now. Now I've got you in my blood. I don't know, dear Count. It's a mystery.
Now,
that's
whoa.
Great.
Yeah.
I thought, is he singing Dracula? La, la, la. I'm with you. Dracula. Tell that story, Kim. Kim David, tell that story. Tell why you picked that.
All right. Well, hi. This is Kim David speaking. You were asking Claudine about how she came to music and how music came into her life. And I thought the whole pantry thing was just so amazing. I've just been quietly absorbing that. And I just think it's thrilling. I came to so much of a lot of what is like physical for me on stage, but also so much of the music that I've decided to interpret comes from just observing and being around my mother, who is something of a twin spirit for me. And I grew up in country Australia with very unsophisticated surrounds. But I had these parents who fed me, like dad, just when I was 14, just brought home this biography of Marlene Dietrich. And I was like, who's this broad? She seems fantastic. And you know what? She was. You know, mom would play Piaf my gay uncle, I was lucky enough to have one, still do, I just need to pass tense, poor Uncle Alan. He gave me a Judy Garland album when I was 10. I mean, everyone knew I was like super the gayest, like straight off the bat. And nobody tried to fight it, which I was very grateful for. But that particular song, Dracula's Tango, is actually an old disco song from the mid-80s that my mum used to play. She was an aerobics instructor when I was really little. And that was my favorite song that she did aerobics to. And I just, all these years, I've just been like obsessed with it. And then we were tinkering around with it, Tracy Stark, my music director and I. And I was just like, let's just do this stupid song. Let's do it.
So what you're saying is that really you started with music with your mom being this instructor. That started very early on in your life. And how did you get from Australia to here? How in the world?
Well, my arms tired. I started watching, it's a little circuitous, but I started watching the film Cabaret when I was a teenager, in my middle teens, and I was absolutely obsessed with this show, the score, Bob Fosse's treatment of it, and especially the shining pinnacle of the whole kit and caboodle, Liza Minnelli. And I just like, I would rewind. I would be up at 3 a.m, rewinding Mein Herr, watching it over and over and over again, asking the universe, when will I get to be Sally Bowles? I set my mind to being as Sally Bowlesian as I possibly could. That took me to music theater school and then realizing that, I mean, Australia is a wonderful, wonderfully dense, artistic pool to swim in. There aren't as many cities as there are over here in the U.S. And so there's just consequently just not as much going on volume wise. So I was like, I've got to do something. Everyone else around my age in Australia at that time was like jetting off to London. And I was like, well, that seems kind of crowded. I'm going to go to New York, see how that works out. And I fell in love with the place, and it remains. I think it makes me a terrible person, but New York is my spiritual home. It's
You are a terrible person. And it's not crowded here.
Yeah, and it's not crowded. It's not crowded in here.
I'm just amazed at how you turned London down and preferred New York. You know, I think that's fabulous. You know, it's just wonderful. I just want, you have done theater and you've done cabaret. And I want to ask you this one question before I move to gay. And that is, what's the difference for you? What's the key to either one for you?
For me, the key is the same for both. I have the exact same level of respect for both kinds of audiences. It's all theater. For me, sitting on the subway and lip syncing to Madonna's Erotica, that's also theater. You know what I mean? It's like theater happens wherever you are. But for me, the key is text. It's absolutely text. It's like as if you are in the center of the text and you're transmitting clearly what it is that you intend through the text that you're supplied, I think then that's theater. And it's like cabaret lyrics, be they in French, German, English, or whatever else you might speak. I do one song in Japanese. But like it's no matter what is going on, it is about the text, because that's the music is like, it's beautiful. It's the mise-en-scene. It's the technique you spend hours upon hours like training for, but the text is really what I personally believe, and there's no right or wrong, but I personally believe the text is what gets into people's hearts and minds and stays there.
I agree with you. The stories of songs are so important. I think that's for me, and no one asked, and I'm just going to put my two cents in, and then I'm going to let you all talk. For me, it is what I choose the song for.
Exactly.
What am I telling? What am, you know, and you all have consistently created characters. So directorially, because I direct also, directorially I'm dissecting you all, because you created, along with Quinn, different characters that you become something totally different once you get on that stage. Now, sometimes that happens in part of when I do my work, but a lot of times I'm channeling my own self and my feelings of what's going on. So it's such a wonderful medium in which to do. But I'm going to leave there, and then I'm going to move to my gay Marshall. Well, I don't know what to say about Miss Thing. I mean, Miss Thing is just too much here. She has getting this award for the recording of Back on Boogie Street, and that's the songs of Leonard Cohen. I just want to play a little something for you that I've fallen in love with, even though there's another song that I like, but this is the one that I want you all to hear.
You ditch it all to stay alive. Thousand kisses deep.
Now I'm going to go back a little bit.
Hold on one second.
I've got to go back a bit, because I want you to hear the very beginning.
The ponies run, the girls are young, the odds are there to beat. You win a while, and then it's done. Your little winning streak. And summon now to deal with you in invincible deceit. You live your life as it's real. A thousand kisses deep. I'm getting fixed. I'm back on Boogie Street.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Wow. Well,
yes. Miss Marsha?
Yes, okay, ma'am.
Talk to me about, you know, now I know you sent me, I want the audience to know that she sent, all of these wonderful people sent me many things to choose from. And these are my preferences. It may not be theirs, but it hit me so much. This particular song is such a deep song. Talk to me about
it. Oh, yeah.
You know
what's funny about that song, Lenny, is that I wasn't going to do it. And then I heard this interview with Judy Collins, who was talking about Leonard Cohen. It was very interesting. And the interviewer asked her, do you think that as Leonard Cohen has aged, that his talent has gone down the drain, basically? And she said, are you kidding? 1,000 Kisses Deep is probably my favorite song, and it's very recent. And mm-hmm. I thought, well, she must know a thing or two, so I'm going to check that out again. And when I did, you know, these songs, these Leonard Cohen songs, before I've done a lot of blues and jazz that I just love, especially the old stuff like Ethel Waters tunes, Go Back Where You Stayed Last Night and stuff like that. It's
yes.
really fun. And then, mm-hmm. of course, I was completely obsessed with Edith Piaf, and I did a one-woman show about her, and I did her songs, and they are so accessible. You know, her songs are such clear, heart-wrenching stories. And Leonard Cohen is like, I feel like a child who doesn't understand anything because it's so layered and deep. And like you just said, mm-hmm. so this is a deep song. And mm-hmm. I can't begin to tell you how many times I sing this song, I go through it, because I want to be real. To me, the important thing when you're on stage, I mean, there's a lot of great voices out there, okay? Giving the audience something that's real and that you feel from your gut. And I tell you, this was a challenge beyond anything that I've ever done. And when I told people I was going to do Leonard Cohen, they said, why? He's depressing. Why do you want to do Leonard Cohen? And I'm like, you know what? Do you know what? The guy started out. Meanwhile, I thought he was depressing too, to tell you the truth. But then I did. That's why I was never interested in him. And then a friend of mine sang a song that I thought she wrote. And I said, oh, my God, Carol, when did you write that song? And she looked at me like I was a poor, uneducated, uncultured child. And she said, yeah, that's Leonard Cohen. And I thought, ooh, I got to check this guy out. And that's how I got into Leonard Cohen. And, Lenny, I just got to tell you that I just feel like it's never over. You know what I mean? Like the discovery of a song, it's never over. Over. Mm-hmm.
That's exactly right.
It's like Kim
That's
said a
exactly
minute ago that the text was everything, but I've got mm-hmm. to go one step further because I had an acting teacher who drove me crazy. First day of class, he put a little drawing on the board and he put like the sea and he put a little boat and he put emotion in great big letters on the part of the sea. And then on the boat, he wrote text. And I thought, you're out of your mind. You're out of your mind, you know? And then I got it because, of course, the text has always been everything to me. And I studied with Uta Hagen, darling, and you better get into that text with her. But
yes.
I suddenly, in other words, the two are important. If you don't have an emotion, your words riding on a real emotion, you know, mm-hmm. you're giving a demonstration mm-hmm. of voice, and bravo, because they're, you know, bravo.
Well,
but,
and there are people who do that. I mean, I want to give kudos to those vocalists who take a
yes.
song and they show us all the different ranges at which they do. But I think what I was getting to also when I was talking to Kim David is I think for me, the most in-depth cabaret performers are usually those who have done theater. Approach it, you do approach it in a different way. You don't approach it like singers who, and having studied classically all my life, and being around singers look at a piece of music and they look at the music and the
notes.
The notes and where the range sits in their voices and how they can make that connection beautiful. And I'm so proud to know so many of them. But actors look at the lyrics as to what the story is. And then we look up at the notes and go, oh, okay, I got that.
Sometimes we don't got that.
And we go down a third or we go down a step, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly.
But I think that there's a difference. There's the difference between cabaret and maybe supper club. Because there's a difference in the reasons why people go to there are two different reasons why the same people can go to both of them. And it's for two very different reasons. One is more that elocution and that execution of the voice and takes you on wonderful journeys while they take you on the content and tell you a bit of the story. But the cabaret performer becomes the story for me.
Right.
I'm pushing myself in there, but I'm a little bit, I'm a hybrid of both of them.
I think you can.
You know. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, sorry, Claudine here. I'm sorry. I find that it's totally all about the storytelling. There's the large arc of the show, you know, that where you're stating what's the problem, you're introducing it, you're in, and then you work it out. You do a lot of different pieces to work it out, and then you find some sort of resolution, but there's inside that each song has its own storytelling.
Absolutely.
And then there's the pattern around it. There's what you create around it, the context, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's like a complete thing. It's not just a series of songs, which is not a just. Mm-hmm. That's in that to say just, but it's more than a series of songs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just tell you it is, but it's also what I learned, and I don't know if it's, and now we get into this, I think almost like a panel conversation about all of us who have done a bit of that. You all have done it a little bit more recently than I have. That being in the room and being able to look into someone's eyes and without blinking is a very, that tells me that I am in my own truth there.
Oh, Lenny, that's like the whole thing. You know, in a recording studio, I am not as happy at all as I am on stage because, you know, you try not to listen to yourself, but it's impossible. You're wearing earphones, you know, and someone's telling you, I don't know, maybe a little higher there, okay, a little flat there, you know, so it's impossible. But when you're on stage, I'm not saying that you want to make mistakes, but the mistakes that you might make are incidental and unimportant because there's a continuity in the performance and things change. And you can't change things on a recording, whereas you can make it really alive when you're in the room with people.
Or in the moment, when you're talking about being in the moment, I think the thing that the breakthrough with me about live performance is when I learned that I knew the song so much in my gut that I was distracted if I decided to sit on someone's lap and sing to them.
Okay.
Yeah.
It didn't bother me a bit. It didn't bother me a bit. It became second nature to me. That's how well I think that if, and you know, you all should consider one day doing a panel or a masterclass talking about what it is that you do in cabaret and what it is, what does it take for a person to make that journey real for your audience member, for them to say, you know, I had a woman say to me one time, Lenny, you never disappoint. That, I take that. That's worth New York Times, everything else. That what it means is that people trust you, and they do trust you. They trust you in that room to come and take them on a journey. And they don't care.
Well, you know,
mistakes are the best things that can happen because it's the recovery of the mistakes that they love because it's the moment, the present. So
Well, absolutely. That's a really, really good point.
Go ahead.
Wait,
you know, with the Leonard Cohen album, I got to tell you, I met so many people, or with the show also, I met so many people who had this kind of reaction to Leonard Cohen, and that was the same as, you know, my mistaken impression of him. And what my goal was to, like, you know, bring people around, show a different side of him. He's funny. And he's incredibly, not only a gifted poet, but the melodies, oh my goodness. I mean, the range and variety of what he's done, it's spectacular. And that was a goal. I think that when you do a show, I think it just has to be, it has to come from a place of huge love for the subject, like I had for Pia, like I have for Leonard Cohen, and like I have for the blues and jazz. I mean, I think that if you don't really love it, it's not going to fly, you know?
Well, you know, I'll say this. I'm gonna do two things. I'm going to talk about what's going to happen on Monday, and then I'm going to tell you the performance that I love the most. But Monday night is the Bistro Awards. It's Monday, May 16th, 2022 at 7 p.m. It's at the Gothic Comedy Club at 208 West 23rd Street. And people, you can get your tickets because the board is filling up now. So those of you who are not saying anything, you can always press the number one if you have a question. We're down to almost the last 20 minutes. So you press the number one, and I'm hoping Quinn is going to be able to catch us before we get off. But you can get tickets.
Hey, Lenny. Yes. Lenny, can I hype my show?
Wait, I have to finish. I have to finish.
Oh, sorry. Excuse me.
www.bistroawards.com is what I have. You want Sherry to kill me, right? You want to, you know.
I'm so sorry.
You know, she will come through the Zoom link and kill me. So that's
Bistro Awards.
The Bistro Awards. Now,
yes.
Gay, is that you saying you want to push your show? Who's pushing
it? It was
show?
Me, yes. You know why I said that is because I always forget to do these things. You know, and somebody says, why didn't you talk about your show? And I'm like, oh, God. So I wrote it on a piece of paper. I said, don't forget. Anyway, yeah, I have three shows coming up in New York, two this month, the last two Tuesdays in May. At 7 o'clock at night at Pangea, Pangea .nyc. You can find the info. And then the next one is that Saturday, June 4th. And now I'll shut up.
All right. The reason why I said something, I went, it's because on the board, I got a call in and it was Quinn, but then she disappeared. So I may.
I may try
to call her while we, you know, this is live. So, you know, I do. Yeah, this is her calling me because, you know, hold on for a second. Yeah. She's calling me.
Okay.
What happened to you, Quinn?
I'm here. I was trying to get on.
I know. All right. I'm going to call you now. Hang up and I'm going to call you and see if I can get you on. Okay.
Okay. Great.
Okay. You're welcome. Bye. I told you. I love live All right, so let's see if we can get Quinn in, and because she was there, and then I think they knocked her off, which can happen sometimes. But I have, let's see, Let me see. Bear with me, audience, and everyone else is going to dial and see if she can come in. Okay. It's dialing her. And
hello.
There you
hey.
Are. We got you.
Here I am.
Yay.
Hi.
Yay.
How are you?
Godfrey, straight no chaser. Well, these divas have been giving me a run for my money. I'm telling you the truth. These divas are too much. These. But now we're welcoming Quinn. Now, listen, I have to tell the audience, this is our fourth guest, and I'm trying to do this. This is a challenge that I want to get you all in enough so that everybody kind of, when they go on Monday night, they'll know who you are when you get up there and do that. Now, Quinn is up. It has been awarded the award for the unique biography, and it's based on Cabaret Experience, and it's Rita Hayworth. Now, I'm just going to play a little something. I'm going to let you take a deep breath, Quinn, and then you're going to talk about what we're going to hear, okay?
Wonderful.
Okay, there we go.
When Mrs. O'Leary's cow kicked the lantern in Chicago town, they said that started the fire that burned Chicago down. That's the story that went around, but here's the real lowdown. Put the blame on Maine, boys. Put the blame on Maine. Maine kissed a buyer from out of town. That kiss burn Chicago down. So you can put the blame on Maine, boys. Put the blame.
All right, I'm not going to, you know, I had to, because I know you're getting ready to tear it up right then. So I'll be right then. So you can talk to us a bit about why Rita Hayworth and you and where you're from and what the cabaret means. Because we've been talking now for 40 minutes. So catch up.
Oh, my goodness. I wish I was there and listening to all of you guys. Rita Hayworth was one of the most powerful and biggest stars in the 1940s. And she's someone who just lit up the screen. And her life story has so many relevant topics. And during COVID, my writer-director, Carter Inskeep, completely rewrote the entire book. And he added elements of female empowerment and the Me Too movement. And even though it's about a star from the 1940s, the story is universal. She was a mother. She was a producer. Her struggle for stardom in the 1940s and being a producer in her own right. And then also, unfortunately, she was the first celebrity that had Alzheimer's, and her daughter started the Alzheimer's Foundation. So she's helped so many millions of people, but she's a star that just lights up the screen and is an inspiration, and an inspiration for women to go after their dreams and go for it and no matter what, and to keep getting up and getting better and keep getting stronger.
Absolutely. Now, so where are you from? Where are you from, Quinn?
Well, I'm originally from Columbus, Indiana, but I've been in New York for a long time. I went to NYU here, and so I'm a New Yorker now.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I always give you all are mostly New Yorkers. Now, there's a difference between native New Yorker. Native New Yorker is born in New York. New York New Yorker is that you all have come in here and we have twisted you all around, and you all are just like us now.
Wow. That's right. That's right. In the soul. In the soul, definitely.
Now tell me, when did the artistry enter into your life? When did you know that this was something that you wanted to do?
Oh my God, I came out of the womb singing. I think I was dancing and singing. My mother and my grandmother, they all said, "Quinn, just 5 minutes of silence, please." And it was so hard. I always had something to sing about or talk about.
That's absolutely wonderful. When you say you picked her, why? I hear who she was, and those of us who know Rita Hayworth know that, you know, that's it. She's the diva of all times there with slinging that hair back, that red hair.
That's but, right. I do a lot of hair slinging in the show.
Yeah, a lot of slinging back there, you know. Why her? Why, Rita? Why?
Well, I'll tell you a really simple reason. When I was growing up, I was like this like chubby little girl with a stutter, and my grandmother lived across the street, and every day after school, I'd go visit Granny Lemley, and she would play for me all of the old movies, like Joan Crawford and Betty Davis, but I didn't know Rita Hayworth, and we would read the biographies, and these women were so powerful and so glamorous and so, you know, just full of life. I wanted to be like these ladies, and then I came to New York, and I was starring in a show off-Broadway called Born to Rumba, and I was playing a Cuban showgirl in Havana, and mm-hmm. Preston and Richie Ridge saw me, and they said, "You know, you look like Rita Hayworth," and I was like, of all of the stars, I knew everybody, but I didn't know Rita Hayworth. And they said, "We've got to introduce you to Carter Inskeep, who did Always Patsy Cline." And so we got together, and this was when I was in my 20s, and we put together the show, which was a completely different show than what we're doing now. And I was younger, you know, approaching the show with this new book that is so rich and salty and really dealing with all kinds of, you know, stories and topics. I can understand her story in a deeper way now. I mean, the show has always gotten great. We've been on Geraldo and Oprah and the New York Post and the Daily. We've gotten great reviews in all incarnations,
wow.
But this particular incarnation, people are leaning forward and we're getting younger audiences, especially young women. And I performed all over the United States with a big band doing this, like at the Kravitz Center in big performing arts centers. But coming out of COVID, my husband said, "Why don't we go back to where you started your career, which was Don't Tell Mama?" And of course, Sydney was like, "Darling, come back." And then we just kept getting great reviews, and we kept getting extended. So we're extended until the end of June, and then hopefully going back out on the road. And it has been such a joy. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I didn't know how I was going to get back out on the stage after two and a half years, you know?
Yeah, no kidding. Wow.
It was scary.
Yeah.
It was so scary.
You know, speaking about that, I'm going to go to Kim David. How did it feel after, you know, in the pandemic, after that time? How are you dealing with that?
Well, for me, it was getting back on stage that I think buoyed what sanity I have throughout the pandemic. It's like, because we, you know, we did like a couple of virtual things at Club Cumming, which was an hysterical effort in and of itself. Like, we had piped in applause, like stadium size applause. I was like, we've got to be stupid with this. Like, I don't want to sing without people clapping. I just can't do it. Speaking of gay, how difficult it is in the studio. But, you know, so we had Matt Berman, luckily, like, because everyone is like out of work. So we could, you know, we could afford Matt Berman to do lights and sound. So he was there and he was piping in all this like crazy applause and stuff. And it was just like, oh, yes, this little oasis. That was in, I think we did that. We did one in like August 2020, and then around Christmas time, we did a very Weimar Christmas show, and we did the same treatment. But then once I was, and then we went to Australia, which was a prison fortress. We went there for Alan Cumming's Adelaide Cabaret Festival. And it was just, again, wow, this crazy oasis of performing. That was my first time in front of a crowd. That was last year. That was June 2021. And it was a bomb. It was like being awash in my dreams. There was really nothing like it. I felt it was, to go back to my first point, it was what drove me to survive the pandemic mentally and emotionally, was just knowing that I was going to be there in a fabulous custom leather tuxedo by Mio Drag Gubernik on stage singing my nonsense. That's what got me there.
Wow.
What about you, Claudine? Claudine, what about you?
Well, yeah, my show was supposed to open, Hey Frenchie was supposed to open March 16th, 2020. And, of course, that didn't happen. During that time, and I think that's the article you read.
Yes.
During that time, I have what's called an essential tremor. It's in my cords, and it's all over the place in there. And I had to learn during the pandemic, I had to learn how to sing differently. And that was a lesson, because I've sung all my life, and that was an incredible lesson. I mean, I had to learn how, you know, it hasn't affected my speaking voice, but it does affect my singing voice, and I had to learn how to keep everything very light, very forward, and still do the characters, you know, still do the stuff. So the whole 2 years of pandemic were me working on that. And when we finally did open at Mama's, I was so nervous. I couldn't, because I didn't know what was going to come out. You know, I didn't know if people were going to accept it, because it wasn't. Well, I mean, I had like three octaves, and now I had one. You know, and I didn't know if people were going to accept it. And I've become. I mean, I told Sydney I he may be the douceur, but I can be the douceuse. So that means the talk singer, you know. Sydney was incredibly supportive. So you know, we got through that, and I think I learned more about songs too. I learned that the songs are not about what you hear in your voice, but what you say in your soul. So it was a. It was really quite an amazing experience. I do have one more show. I'm going to plug it at Don't Tell Mom is on May 22 at 7 p.m. So there you go.
You know, I don't know. I was at, you know, Don't Tell Mom is, I still have my flyer from them when I did, when I was doing cabaret. So all of us shared in that space. It's magnificent. Mm-hmm. They don't remember me at all.
If those walls could talk, you know.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
It's such a wonderful place, and I know people who are doing it now, and I send kudos and love to them that they're still doing it, even though they don't remember me. Just say Lenny Godfrey says hello and love. Okay.
Now they'll know you.
It keeps us alive. Now, Gay, you're the last. Tell me about the pandemic.
Yeah.
Because we got.
Oh my God.
All right,
you don't want to know.
You got 3 minutes. That's all you got. Three minutes. Stop.
Okay, I'm gonna take them all, Lenny. I'm gonna take them all. I got stuck. The record that's getting the Bistro Award launched on March 1st, 2020. So of course, nothing happened, and I had gone back to France to see my husband, who is French, and suddenly found myself a prisoner. Down south in Biarritz, which sounds, like I say, very glamorous, but guess what? It was like I have a glimpse into what it was like with the Gestapo. You had to, you won't believe this, they could never do this in the United States. You had to have a permission slip to leave your house, and you were only allowed out 1 hour a day, and you could only go within a kilometer of where you lived. And we got checked, you know, your papers. Every time we went out, it was just an unbelievable, like, you know, it was already a difficult experience But then to have this added pressure of this surveillance mentality, and I don't know, I couldn't even deal with it. So I became the sloth of the century. I could hardly get out of a chair. And then when I got the bistro email, I'm telling you, I did buy a trampoline. I got a little trampoline, and that kept me bouncing around. That was the best part of the pandemic, was that I got a trampoline so that I wasn't completely idle. But I'm a dancer, you know, so it was very difficult, this business of being locked in. And then I got this bistro email from Sherry Eaker, and I just bounced off the walls. My husband said, "What's wrong? What's wrong?" I said, "Nothing. I'm going to New York." And so, yeah. That's the pandemic was a nightmare, but I know a lot of people had it a lot worse. A lot of people lost people. I just couldn't get over the repressive. I couldn't get over that aspect of it in France, but I'm back.
Well, I tell you, the four of you, I am so very honored that the four of you took any time to come on this program to grace me with not only your talent, but your wonderful personalities. You all are too deep.
Thank you.
Well, you know, you're not too shabby yourself.
Right, yeah.
You're fabulous.
I do a little bit.
You are fabulous, Lenny.
Oh, thank you very much. But you know what? I send bravo and kudos to you for Monday night. I tell people to really go and listen and see you and enjoy you and absorb and digest you, because it is a wonderful gift that you give the audiences. I can tell by your recordings. I can tell by talking to Sherry. I share a friend, Patricia Snyder, with Claudine, and she and Sherry, you know, talk to me about it. I have missed a lot. I'm stuck to this. I'm loving this, but it doesn't allow me a lot of freedom when I need to plan it. I have to either pick or choose, and right now this is it. But I hope in the future to see each and every one of you perform and then see you at some event or something, because it has been my pleasure this evening to talk to you on the radio. Now, I'm going to talk to all of you, I hope, on Zoom in a few minutes. You take a sip of water or whatever it is that you need to do, and come to that connection. And at this point in time, I just want to thank the audience for hanging in there. The board is totally full. That's why you probably popped in and popped out, Quinn, because I was looking for you. And when I saw your number, I went, okay, she made it, and then you were gone. So
I didn't think I was on. I thought I was just listening.
No, I would have been able to put you on if you had stayed long enough, but there was too many people on the board, so I had to get you in. And all people, now you all don't have a chance to say anything because we're down to the last minute. But I want to thank you all for tuning in. It's the board is full. I hope Monday night everybody has a fabulous – I hope the audience that's listening, the audience that attended here, goes and get your ticket at www.bistro.com. awards.com and make that in the beginning of us celebrating all, you know, I've got 90 seconds, all that we can do now to bring the joy back into our lives that cabaret does. So I love you all. I'll see you all in a few minutes. Take a little break.
Okay.
I'm going to end
it. Thank you. It's been so much fun.
Lenny.
Such a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
You know, and I want to say next week there will be a town hall with Franz and Julius and Deborah and Brenda from California. Mm. So we're going to have a good time next week. But thank you all tonight. And thank you for listening to Lenny Godfrey, Straight No Chaser. I'll see you all in a bit.
This is something we all know. Fever isn't such a new thing. Fever started long ago.
never know how much I love you. You never know how much I care. When you put your arms around me, I get a feeling that's too hard to bear. You give me fever. When you kiss me, fever. When you hold me tight, fever. In the morning, fever all through the night.